the category of indifferent things, but the virtue shown in each case is equal. Virtue is not changed by the matter with which it deals. If the matter is hard and stubborn, it does not make the virtue worse. If pleasant and joyous, it does not make it better. Therefore, virtue necessarily remains equal. For, in each case, what is done with equal uprightness, with equal wisdom, and with equal honor. Hence, the states of goodness involved are equal, and it is impossible for a man to transcend these states of goodness by conducting himself better, either the one man in his joy, or the other amid his suffering. And two goods, neither of which can possibly be better, are equal. For if things which are extrinsic to virtue can either diminish or increase virtue, then that which is honorable ceases to be the only good. If you grant this, honor has wholly perished. And why? Let me tell you. It is because no act is honorable that is done by an unwilling agent that is compulsory. Every honorable act is voluntary. Alloy it with reluctance, complaints, cowardice, or fear, and it loses its best characteristic, self-approval. That which is not free cannot be honorable, for fear means slavery. The honorable is wholly free from anxiety and is calm. If it ever objects, laments, or regards anything as an evil, it becomes subject to disturbance and begins to flounder about amid great confusion. For on one side, the semblance of right calls to it. On the other, the suspicion of evil drags it back. Therefore, when a man is about to do something honorable, he should not regard any obstacles as evils, even though he regard them as inconvenient, but he should will to do the deed and do it willingly. For every honorable act is done without commands or compulsion. It is unalloyed and contains no admixture of evil. I know what you may reply to me at this point. Are you trying to make us believe that it does not matter whether a man feels joy, or whether he lies upon the rack and tires out his torturer? I might say in answer, Epicurus also maintains that the wise man, though he is being burned in the bull of Phalaris, will cry out, 'Tis pleasant, and concerns me not at all. Why need you wonder, if I maintain that he who reclines at a banquet, and the victim who stoutly withstands torture, possess equal goods, when Epicurus maintains a thing that is harder to believe, namely, that it is pleasant to be roasted in this way. But the reply which I do make is that there is great difference between joy and pain. If I am asked to choose, I shall seek the former and avoid the latter. The former is according to nature, the latter contrary to it. So long as they are rated by this standard, there is a great gulf between. But when it comes to a question of the virtue involved, the virtue in each case is the same, whether it comes through joy or through sorrow. Vexation and pain and other inconveniences are of no consequence, for they are overcome by virtue. Just as the brightness of the sun dims all lesser lights, so virtue, by its own greatness, shatters and overwhelms all pains, annoyances, and wrongs, and wherever its radiance reaches, all lights which shine without the help of virtue are extinguished. And inconveniences, when they come in contact with virtue, play no more important a part than does a storm cloud at sea. This can be proved to you by the fact that the good man will hasten unhesitatingly to any noble deed, even though he be confronted by the hangman, the torturer, and the stake. He will persist, regarding not what he must suffer, but what he must do, and he will entrust himself as readily to an honorable deed as he would to a good man. He will consider it advantageous to himself, safe, propitious. And he will hold the same view concerning an honorable deed, even though it be fraught with sorrow and hardship, as concerning a good man who is poor or wasting away in exile. Come now, contrast a good man who is rolling in wealth with a man who has nothing, except that in himself he has all things. They will be equally good, though they experience unequal fortune. This same standard, as I have remarked, is to be applied to things as well as to men. Virtue is just as praiseworthy if it dwells in a sound and free body, as in one which is sickly or in bondage. Therefore, as regards your own virtue also, you will not praise it any more if fortune has favored it by granting you a sound body, than if fortune has endowed you with a body that is crippled in some member, since that would mean rating a master low because he is dressed like a slave. For all those things over which chance holds sway are chattels, money, person, position. They are weak, shifting, prone to perish, and of uncertain tenure. On the other hand, the works of virtue are free and unsubdued, neither more worthy to be sought when fortune treats them kindly, nor less worthy when any adversity weighs upon them. Now, friendship in the case of men corresponds to desirability in the case of things. You would not, I fancy, love a good man if he were rich, any more than if he were poor, nor would you love a strong and muscular person more than one who is slender and of delicate constitution. Accordingly, neither will you seek or love a good thing that is mirthful and tranquil, more than one that is full